The Conversation is back with me, Alexis Nunez, and Shaka Hislop. And today we are continuing the conversation with someone who has been at the forefront of the battle against racism in football for the better part of 20 years, Troy Townsend, head of player engagement at Kick It Out and father of Crystal Palace footballer Andrus Townsend, joins us to share more of his experiences. And we ask why the European Super League proposal seemed to anger more people than recent racist events in the game.
Well, firstly, I want to say, Troy Townsend, thank you so much for joining us on The Conversation. Yet another edition with myself and Shaka Hislop. As you know, just continuing this conversation that so strongly started following the death of George Floyd last year, that everyone was forced to look at themselves, look within themselves, look in the mirror and see what we can actually do now to fully tackle, you know, the online hate and real life hate that we see, especially the racist hate that we have been seeing. I know you definitely, as a huge part of Kick It Out, has been super vocal about this, not just, you know, in the last year, but, you know, you've pretty much made it also a career for yourself. Now, though, how would you describe the time, I suppose, that we're going in now, or at least within the last year, following that death of George Floyd, and probably either the steps forward or even the steps backward that you have seen in comparison to the last couple of years?
Yeah, I think, you know, the unfortunate death of George Floyd has left a lot of questions, raised a lot of questions here in England, but also given the opportunity of our players to become more vocal in support of our American sports stars, who were being very vocal, you know, and showing solidarity in that way, you know, the taking of the knee and the meaning of what the taking of the knee was to the players over here. But then also turning that focus back on the governance of our game. So our governing bodies, you know, the Premier League, the FA, you know, the Football League, the PFA, and asking really strong questions inwardly to those organisations, because our players here in England, you know, our black players in England, our brown players in England, have never felt that the issue of racism has been effectively dealt with, or the messaging around racism has ever been effectively dealt with in our own country. So the power of the player voice has grown, and it's been, honestly, it's been a blessing to see, to be totally honest, over here. You know, players not being held back by, you know, the social side, the media sides of their football clubs, and being allowed to express their experiences, you know, and the horrible nature of what they've been subjected to, but also the allyship. So the white allies, the white colleagues who were prepared to talk up in this space, you know, and Ben Mee of Burnley, it's only a small club in this country, many would say, but he's the captain of that club. And he spoke so powerfully after a plane was flown over Man City Stadium, the Etihad, that said white lives matter. And he was very vocal at that time. So the immediate aftermath was really positive. The governance of the game took on board and knew that they had to do more. But unfortunately, the time that we had fans back in our stadium, which was only a short time during the period of December, the taking of the knee was starting to be booed. So fans were booing the taking of the knee. In the Premier League, it was respected. The fans were applauding. But in the lower leagues, unfortunately, the players were being booed. And then all of a sudden, social media, which I kind of preempted last March before the current lockdown that we were in, exploded with all this hate. And it's unmanageable. It's not football's problem, by the way, but football has to be stronger in the messages that it sends. So, you know, obviously we'll be having a boycott in this country about those social media platforms. But I see it as a kind of roller coaster. Mm. 1 minute, the energy is there. You know, the energy to do well is there. You know, we had the European Super League fallout, you know, and there was a lot of collective energy at that stage, collective energy that I've never seen in football before. So we can only hope that the matters that are arising now creates the kind of change that we want to see. But I always think that when fans are back in stadiums, unfortunately, we may be talking on a slightly different way when hopefully next season they are back.
Troy, you see, football's messaging has got to be better. Is that really where the biggest challenge for the game? Is it just about a messaging issue, or is it more administrative and governance?
Shaka, I suppose it's challenging the messaging, because, you know, over here in England, we have no room for racism. UEFA has say no to racism. The very high profile incident recently on the football pitch where Glenn Kamara was racially abused by Kadela of Slavia Prague was while Kadela had say no to racism on its sleeve. So what are we saying with that messaging? That's probably what I mean. What are we saying with the messaging? Is it acceptable? Is it not acceptable? Are we going to challenge in the right way? Are we going to provide the appropriate sanctions if someone is found guilty? So that's probably what I mean in terms of those challenges. There also needs to be a better reflection in regards to the governance of our game. Yep. What our boards look like, you know, how reflective are they of the playing, you know, those that play the game from the male and the female game. Until we get all those bits right, I'm not sure we're ever going to effectively challenge in the right way or effectively administer. Because what you're saying is, you know, in that Kamara incident, what they were saying is someone calling Kamara an expletive monkey was only worth 10 games. Glenn Kamara, since that day, since that game, I think it was about a month ago now, has been constantly targeted based on the colour of his skin every single day. So his experience is now more than 10 games. It's now 5 weeks. It's an experience now that will impact on his family. It's an experience that will impact on his consciousness if it will ever happen again. How do we quantify that? How do we equate the impact of, you know, being on the end of that, feeling that trauma? Because it is trauma. And until football can tell you that it's trauma, I'm not sure football is going to effectively make the right punishments in this space.
And, you know, one thing that you did speak about just now, too, is the energy. And we keep saying this, keep the same energy. You know, we recently saw an absolute uproar from everybody and their cat about the European Super League proposal. And then I suppose a lot of people, you know, myself included, you were very vocal about it. A lot of players too, you know, we heard from Patrick Bamford, who, you know, as a white man laughed it off and said, you know, I see my teammates get racially abused and I don't even see the same uproar. Do you feel like the energy has changed somewhat? Do you feel like it's a bit stronger this time? Because, for example, we are seeing, like we said, Patrick Bamford speak out. We're seeing players now just screenshot the racist abuse that they do, whereas before they used to blur it out or try and just ignore it and move on and continue playing the game. But now they leave the screen names up. They tag the people's profile. Do you feel like the energy has changed for the better in the way that at least us who have been the victims are trying to deal with this on our own?
Yeah, Alexis, I get what you're saying, and I appreciate, you know, the kind of references that you put in there as well. What I try to get across is that the hate that is happening at the moment on the social media platforms is effectively not football's problem. Yeah. Football can deal with it, and football must send, you know, must talk, the players must talk about their experiences and highlight them and bring them to the fore for everyone to understand that, you know, they're human beings trying to go about their daily work, by the way. And because they're deemed to have made a mistake or because their team has lost a game, for some reason, it's the black players that will get targeted with that hate.
Yeah.
So effectively, we're trying to call out the social media platforms, the social media companies to do better, to serve their users better, you know, eliminate the hate on their platforms. But the reason I always say this is because I've never seen this collective energy when our sport has been littered with fan abuse, player-on-player abuse, governance abuse. You know, Eni Aluku, the famous case only in 2017 when she called out the FA, you know, for the racism that she received within an England camp. She was vilified for that, exactly. And that's normally our experience, is that when we talk up and talk out in football, we're often shot down. We're often told, well, you know, are you sure? Are you sure you heard what you did? Or it's not time to speak out. This is when I will applaud the game. If this current energy around social media, like you said, around the European Super League, if that energy then exists when we're having to call out, I don't know, an opposition player, when we're having to speak about the team that has protected that opposition player who was deemed to have racially abused a player, you know, if the strongest messages in terms of statements and sanctions from the governance of our game, you know, really comes down heavy in the way that it's come down heavy recently. We saw our government, the English government, get involved and talk about changing of legislation in our country. We've never heard that before when it comes to racism. We've never heard that you could change things. We're hearing that clubs could get kicked out. Individual players could not represent their countries. All we're asking for is parity. We're asking to understand our experiences, appreciate our experiences, and put the right and appropriate sanctions in place that would stop anybody from thinking that it is acceptable. And you've got to remember, some people think it's acceptable to target players based on the color of their skin.
Mm-hmm.
We've got to stop that somehow.
Trent, let me ask, why is the game so resistant to change around racism?
That's a million-dollar question there, Shekhar, and I'm not sure I've got $1 million. But let's be honest, football's always, from the top level of the game, football's always looked the same, hasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Football has always been represented in a power circle by people that, you know, you look at us three here, they don't represent us. They've never had the experiences that we would have had, our forefathers and mothers would have had. Do they really understand and appreciate the impact of racial abuse? So the players, it's almost like we are pleading for change. I shouldn't, or we shouldn't, have to plead for change in our field so that we can be respected based on what we contribute, mm-hmm. rather than dehumanized based on the color of our skin. We don't want the change in the high circles. We haven't seen the change before. There is minimal change. There's slight change. It's not effective, positive, powerful change. I think we're moments away from it. If you want me to be totally honest, I think we're moments away from it. But can I just add the year that it's 2021?
Yeah.
And we're still talking about, well, I think we're moments away from it.
See, that's the thing. And I know it was a difficult question to answer because I've been struggling to find a reason. I've been struggling to be able to articulate. I'm not that anyone has asked me that question. I've just been struggling with it myself. In trying to explain this to myself, why does the game continue to resist the change that it does? Why do we, who are only calling for equality, we're asking for nothing more. We're asking for an equality, for a recognizing of our humanness, come into such resistance from so many different parts of the game. And I've struggled with it. I wrote down a couple of sentences that said they don't understand or appreciate our story. And I think that speaks to some of the misunderstanding and the complacency around race. I also truly believe, and this is very difficult for a lot of people to hear, that complacency leans into a supremacy, and which goes much further than our game. If I challenge you in saying that my history, my story, the story of our people is littered with this kind of vitriol and resistance in a service to what you've become through slavery, through colonialism, it's somehow taking away from who you are, you know? And I've really struggled with the entire concept as to why we continue. As you say, Troy, in 2021, We are having discussions as though it were 1821, and we have got to be better as a race of human beings. Surely we've got to evolve more than that.
I chuckled at your comment there because that's how bad it is.
Yep.
You know, that is how bad it is. And at times, I don't want anyone to think that I've chuckled because I'm disrespecting your comment.
No,
chuckled because we've heard it. We've tried to display our emotion around it, because it is an emotional thing for us. You know, I go back to the times of, you know, our legends, our black legends, our Cyril Regis's, our John Barnes's. Shaka, you know them as well as I do, and more so. You would have played through those periods just afterwards. You know, the famous image we have in this country of a banana landing at John Barnes's feet back in 1988. And yet the conversation around it, you know, was for him having to keep everything, all his emotions that he felt about that time in check,
mm-hmm.
you know, to continue to play. And I thought we were better. I honestly thought we were getting better in England. And why did I think that? Because I am privy to those conversations you're talking about, Shaka. Mm-hmm. You know, I do see the faces sometimes when I arrive in a boardroom, you know, as smartly dressed as everyone else in that boardroom, but the look as if, why are you in here? You know? Right. And then in 2018, we had a couple of incidents here, and I always talk about these because I never get the answers. So like you just said, I never get the answers. In a North London derby, Tottenham versus Arsenal in our country, Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, the best player on the park on the day, scores two goals. One of those goals, he's faced with another banana. Mm. Now, 30 years plus from that John Barnes banana, I thought we were better educated.
Yeah.
We had better understanding, better appreciation of the impact, and would acknowledge it. If you ever get the newspapers from that period of time, you will see that none of them related that banana to any kind of reference to a black player. It was deemed as a missile. So we effectively failed to call out one of the biggest actions of racism within our stadiums in the Premier League at the time. We failed to call it for what it was. We made excuses. We denied it. It was there. It was visible. It's there in our face. We denied it. Mm. That's when I realised we actually haven't got any better. We are stuck in the dark ages. Raheem Sterling came out obviously a week later, and you know the post that he made about the social media platforms and about the media, how they needed to make change. Was he listened to? I think he was for a short period of time. And then it was just get on with it again. But for some reason, this game, our game here, doesn't like the power of the ex-player, the ex-black player, who now could move, transition out of playing into roles of prominence. But again, all around that is you look at the way we're spoken about in football matches, the commentary in football matches in our country. We're never deemed as leaders. We're not deemed as the talented one in the middle of the park. You know, power and pace is often a reference for us over here to describe the quickness of a black player, but not intelligence. Yeah. So if that's drummed into the audience, the people that are watching, they don't believe that black players can transition out and make success in business, in football, in, you know, so it starts way back from even what we can see visually. But you've got to have a certain ear to take all that in and understand it and appreciate it. I'm fed up of it's the quick player at the front or the big lad, athletic, physical specimen at the back.
Yep.
They have other attributes that we haven't learned to describe our black players for. And I'll stand up in anywhere and talk about that and talk about the banana in 2018. Because if we cannot address things like that, then where are we going? And then it will be another generation, that's going to have to face that and collectively come together to create the change. Like I said to you, I think the power of the player voice now is the most important. It's the ones I love to listen to because those experiences are now coming out into the public domain. And if you don't want to listen now, there's no more excuses.
Well, just on that, because, I mean, obviously we all know that racism isn't just something that reared its ugly head in the last year. It's something that, you know, has been a battle for our ancestors, basically. But now, as you said, Troy, more than ever, everyone's really attuned to every player's reaction and how they deal with it. And even though we all agree that when all these things happened, at least in the last year, everyone looks to us, you know, as persons of color to see how we would react to it and almost how we can teach people to not be racist when it's like, it's not our job to teach you how to not hate on us for the color of our skin, but still you do accept that there is a role that they have to play. For you now, you know, being at Kick It Out for how long as you have been, and then also having a son in Andros who is an active footballer right now and has dealt with this as well, how have you, or how has your reactions or what you guys discuss or with other players, how have you almost told them they should react now as opposed to before? We spoke to Anton Ferdinand a couple of weeks ago as well, and he was saying how when the incident happened with John Terry, again, he was vilified for speaking out, where he felt, you know what, let me not, he says he didn't even want to bring his brother Rio into it because he said he didn't want it to seem like a bother. So we've gone from, you know, not knowing how to react when we're racially abused to now there's a lot of players that are questioning, should they still take the knee? You know, should they still speak up as much? I spoke to a friend of mine who plays for Watford, and I asked him when we first started this, if he'd be comfortable coming on to talk about his experiences. And he literally said, sure. But he said, what difference will this make now, though? You know, because he said he's spoken about it before within, you know, his own facilities and whatnot and community. He's spoken out about it as well in on Instagram. But here he is today still getting banana peels in any post that he puts up. So how, I guess, have you had to change your reaction? How have you had to kind of speak to Andros about changing his reactions and other players now?
To be honest with you, Alexis, I'm not sure how much you know, but I'm quite fortunate because I educate within football as well.
Yeah.
So we have an academy structure over here that, you know, from nines to 23s. So from under nines all the way through to 23, staff and parents. We're empowering people now. We're empowering players. We're giving players the education that they should really get in their academic systems, but they're not. We're letting players understand the conversation around racism and involving them in it. So, you know, again, I'll say that's black players, that's brown players, that's white players. That's players from, I don't call them minority ethnic backgrounds because who are minority ethnic, by the way, but players from that have come over to England from other countries. So we are empowering our players now to never shy away from this conversation, never shy away from the experience or the impact that racism has on you. And I want to identify one young player who I put a lot of time in, who I'm so proud in the way that he challenged the racism that he received. And that's Rhian Brewster, formerly of Liverpool and now of Sheffield United. Rhian Brewster, for a young man of 17 years of age at the time, received some of the most horrendous racial abuse, not on social media platforms, face-to-face, face-to-face in football matches where he's representing his country and where he's representing his team in youth Champions League football. The measure of that young man, and hopefully, you know, 3 years we'd been doing some work with Rhian and Liverpool Football Club, was in how to deal with it, in how to call it out, respectfully, by the way, because there is anger inside of us. Shaka, you know, there's rage inside of us at the time, isn't there? And we could actually fly off the handle. But what does that do? It turns the focus back on us, away from the perpetrator. So now players are having those conversations and are empowered to realise that it's their voice, it's their experience. So there is no longer this being told, not now, because of the impact that, your words could have on a football club or an environment or a situation. So I think that the work that has gone behind, particularly the younger players now, has enabled them to speak up and speak out, has enabled them to say, no, I will not be quiet, keep quiet about my experiences anymore. And the opportunity to share those experiences with the changing room, let's say, provides that opportunity to then share those experiences widely, knowing that you're going to have the support of your teammates as well. And I think that's the big thing. Players have always felt, when they speak out, they're alone. It's just me. There's no one there for me. But now, and I'll even tell you this from my point of view, challenging racism in this country is tiring. It's tiring. It's a 24-hour, 7 days a week, every month job. And you get pushback so much. But what particularly the last year has done is I see people now side by side. I see people behind, I see people in front. And if we ever are going to get to a stage where maybe we don't have to have conversations like this anymore, it's because of the power of the collective. And I think, you know, that advancement now of players having their own voice and having their own platforms has enabled that massively.
Troy, I had to nod heavily when you said challenging racism in this country, in any country, is tiring, because it really is. And I've felt that. And in all the conversations I've had with people who've suffered racist abuse, who continue to advocate for equality, I think that is one of the most unseen yet overwhelming emotions, that it is draining.
Yeah.
And at times you just have to step back. And how do you say to yourself, I need to step back from challenging racism for calling equality as a black man in this space? But you just sometimes you just have to. And I've had my moments over the last 12 months where I have just stopped doing interviews, stopped speaking on it, just because I felt I needed it. It is tough. It is hard at times. And I think that's, so to hear you say that, to give credence to my own emotions around the issue, is as much as I agree with you, I feel empowered. Or let me just say, I don't feel as guilty in my own self when I do have those moments, because it really is tough. But at the same time, I find such power, such motivation in the player of today and how they challenge the racism that they have to deal with. You mentioned Brewster. Alexis mentioned Rio Ferdinand, Anton Ferdinand, who we spoke to, Raheem Sterling, Marcus Rashford. The way that the new generation are understanding social media, are understanding the moment and what it calls for and their response, I find incredible in so many ways, because I'm not sure that I could have done it at 17 or at 20 or at 23 as so many of these are. And that's where I find real inspiration to kind of pick yourself up and dust yourself off. You know, so to hear you say it again just kind of leans into how I feel and so many others feel in this field.
I was going to say to you, Shekha, you know, you speak about Anton, and I had the privilege of being on Anton's documentary. And that was the periods of time when I then realized that I did need to step away. And I stepped away for a little while, because a very powerful documentary that spoke about how Anton was let down by the system, by the way. That's what happened. He was let down by the system that impacted
his playing. A system that we're a part of, by the way. And that for me is also tough, because we talk about football, we talk about this system, and we're in the system. You know, we've been pushing for and calling for, in your instance, with Kick It Out, for 28 years, three decades. And we are still here feeling let down by this system that we've contributed to. We are a part of and made ourselves available to.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, the power of what you've just said there, when you hear 28 years from, so I normally say 28 years and it just rolls off my tongue. When you hear 28 years from you, I then realize how long the struggle has been. And it has been a struggle. And the person that brought me into the organization and started kicking out, Lord Herman Ouseley, is someone I respect immensely, because I'm talking to you about our battles and challenges here in 2021 and the 10 years that I've been in this organization. What must it have been like for him when he said, I want to start an organization to tackle racism in 1993? You know, and nothing we say here today will probably comprehend what he had to deal with, and I know continue to deal with. But I, like you, am really infused by the young player, by the power of their voice, by the platforms that they had. We didn't have these platforms when we were growing up, you know, so our voices were inside four walls, and if someone wanted to shut the door on us, they would, you know, and then no one could hear us cries for help. But these players now, and in a sense, it is a cry for help. And again, listen to what I'm saying here. It is a cry for help. Understand our experiences, understand what I go through to do my job, which is playing football. Yeah. And you identified Marcus Rashford there, you know, as someone who has created societal change in our country, someone who has taken on the government and made them do a U-turn, not once, not twice, I think three times. Someone who Boris Johnson now calls, you know, our prime minister in this country, but yet miss a chance against Arsenal for Man United or not finish a chance. And he's then subjected to the same abuse that his colleagues are as well. So it doesn't matter who you are, what status you have, what you have done over a period of time to help show the government that we need to look after our young people, by the way, by feeding them. Listen to that. The minute he doesn't stick a chance away at the Emirates, he's then subjected to that same abuse that all the other players are. So what I'm trying to say there is, you don't get identified by name then. You get identified by color.
Yeah, that's something that, you know, I said that I've learned as well in my own experiences. And I said it last year on one of our pre-shows for the FA Cup, that I've learned that you can never out-achieve racism, because at the end of the day, you know, you could be the king. But as you said, at that point, someone wants to bring you back down to where they feel you belong, and they identify you based on the color of your skin or how your hair looks. And that's just absolutely unfortunate. Yeah. And I guess, Troy, just with that, final question from me, just which is the number one question everyone's asking, and everyone's specifically asking us, and people like Shaka, of course, who's part of Show Racism, the Red Card, you at Kick It Out, and that's a huge what's next. And it's easier said than done, but I know you recently spoke to our colleague Mark Ogden for ESPN on a piece, and how you said we feel like we have the attention or a bit more attention from the world in this fight. However, we know it is far from over. And one of the things that's, I suppose, people are growing tired of is the slogans, the hashtags, these gestures that feel like they still need a bit more weight behind them to continue this fight going forward. For you, I suppose, what would the what next or the best what next step be?
For me, football needs to create a space now where it can talk with its partners. And when I say partners, seeing that rugby has now come off, it's doing a social media boycott, golf, tennis, Lewis Hamilton has posted a piece now. We now need to collectively say that this is not just a footballing issue. This is an issue that has been created for our sports stars and obviously for people that, everyday people in our society that, you know, just try and live their lives. But the power of sport can have so much influence in that. For me, let's break down the barriers. Let's just not say football is dealing with this. Let's say that collectively, as the global sports industry, we are coming together, we are being proactive, and we are creating a space where solutions can be heard. I'm tired of not being listened to. I've mentioned tired quite a lot. I'm tired of not being listened to. I'm tired of you two, you know, in your respective fields, doing so much, and we are being listened to, but do you know what I mean? I mean at the highest level. We're being listened to. We educate in this space. Shaka, the work you do with Show Race and the Red Card will influence so many young people who, when we are, long after we've gone, will be walking the same path as we do, you know? And I just think if we can create this space now where that collective noise that's being made at the moment continues to drive the change that I believe the good majority want to see. Yeah. You know, let's not go silent at moments of need. Let's not go quiet on that banana that's thrown on the football pitch and let the narrative be controlled by people that have never left those lived experiences. Let's make sure that none of us are afraid to call it out. And if we do call it out, we walk back with an army of supporters who have said, well done, to override the negativity that will exist. And let's make sure that we are comfortable, all comfortable in our own environments, in our football clubs, in our boardrooms, on our playing fields. This is now not a time for us to ignore any experience that anybody has. And this will cross all forms of discrimination, not just racism. But obviously the target has been around racism because of, you know, its ugly head again. So for me, tangible solutions. I always say, Alexis, I always say, give me the paid role and I'll do it for you. Do you know what I mean? I'm not paid to do that, but give me the paid role and I guarantee you'll see change quicker than what change has happened. And I'll bring people through that would help, effectively help that change along the way. One thing I'd like to say just before we close is, I think there's a fear around the black skin, the black man, the black woman, for some reason, in authority. I don't know what it is. What is that? We don't want to take people's jobs. We want to be part of the change. We want to be part of the solutions. We want to present what we, you know, what we've had to experience, what our colleagues have to experience, what our family members, and help that drive change in the game. But for some reason, we're always having to knock on the door. And the door doesn't really open wide enough to accept us in for us to then be able to work alongside the figures that are already there. That will be the biggest change for me.
Troy, let me just close by saying thank you very much, not just for your time here with us today, but for your three decades of service to this game in a way that certainly impacted my own playing career and my own views around the roles that we all can play in this game in a call for equality for all of us. I think these conversations are important for all of us to truly have and to keep having. something I've said over recent weeks. You know, people have been asking about, you know, the work that we do at Charisse and the Red Card that you mentioned, and ask if I see light at the end of the tunnel. And my response to that is a simple one. I saw light at the end of the tunnel 25 years ago when we started this organization. I think what we are recognizing now is how much longer that tunnel actually is. Yeah. And many people wanted to give it credit for. People thought that we could take a knee and have a couple of hashtags. Yep. And we'd somehow be out the other side of this tunnel. But no, it's a long old tunnel. And as I tell everyone, I'm a glass half full kind of guy in everything that I do. There's light at the end of the tunnel. It's just a long old tunnel with quite a few bumps hidden in the dark. Yeah. So let's keep supporting each other. Let's keep focused on that light. Let's keep doing this work. Thank you very much for all your efforts on a personal level, and so many who've come before and after me in allowing us to chase a dream. Thank you.
Appreciate it, Shaka. Thank you. Thank you, Alexis.
That's a wrap on this episode. Massive thank you to Troy for joining us, and thanks to you, the listeners, for tuning in. We'll be back with more of the conversation very soon.